I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. In a 500-channel nightly showdown for viewers, an unlikely contender is grabbing attention and ratings. The Latin American telenovela in Spanish, subtitle-free but chock-a-block with wild gesticulation and tears, is turning television's 8 to 9 o'clock hot zone into something even more caliente. That's the time when families across the United States, no, check that, families around the world curl up for their nightly dose of melodrama, whether they know what the stars are saying or not. Long written off as those Latin American soaps, the telenovela's new popularity transcends borders and nationalities. Produced in Brazil, Venezuela, Colombia, Mexico, and Miami, the Latin telenovela has a standing date with viewers every night of the week, sometimes for 6 months at a stretch. Then the story wraps. The ending is happy, and viewers await the next one, and there is always a next one. Connection listeners, if you're already hooked on the impassioned world of Gata Salvaje or Rebecca, why do you watch? Is it the stories, and just the fact that they're simple and basic and compelling, or is it that melodrama in any language translates? And what does the growth of the telenovela tell us about the influence of Latin American culture around the world? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us this hour, Catherine Benamou. She teaches Spanish, Latino studies, and film studies at the University of Michigan. She went to college in Brazil, where she first got hooked on telenovelas. Since then, she's written extensively about them, and she's joining us from the NPR studio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Catherine, welcome to The Connection.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
And also joining us, Antonio Lapastina. He teaches in the communication department at Texas A&M University. He grew up in Brazil, watching telenovelas with the rest of the country, and went on to write his dissertation, among other academic publications, about telenovelas. He's joining us on the phone from Mercedes, Texas. Antonio, welcome to The Connection.
I'm glad to be here.
Let me start, Catherine, with you, because you've sent us a short clip from a very recent episode of the telenovela. And I'm going to take a run at the pronunciation here. Entre el amor y el odio, is that right?
Yes.
Between love and hate. Spanish not being my first language. I should get that on the table early in the program. But at the beginning of this scene that you've sent us, there are two women walking down the street in a Mexican town. What's going on? Can you tell us, and then we'll listen to a bit of it?
Okay, these women, whose names are Maria Magdalena, of course a reference to Mary Magdalene, in Christian tradition, and her cousin Rebecca have just denounced the abuse, the physical abuse they have suffered from Maria Magdalena's husband and Rebecca's son on a radio program hosted by real-life personality Alfredo Palacios. Actually, Alfredo Palacios and his beauty parlor appear in a previous telenovela called El Privilegio de Amar, The Privilege of Loving. This program is broadcast out of Guanajuato, where they live. It's a live talk show format where women can actually share their problems and hear some advice from Alfredo Palacios and other women. So after denouncing this abuse, which we've seen over several episodes, Maria Magdalena says that she fears now that her husband Marcial might harm her or even kill her two sons in revenge. But of course, this is not what happens. She gathers her courage, and by the time Marcial, who has overheard the program, reaches them in his SUV screeching to a halt, she is resolved not to put up with the situation any longer, and she takes the first steps toward a divorce, which by now, in the last few episodes, has taken place. So Marcial, of course, is played by a very talented theatrical actor, Alberto Estrella, who has a tremendous range of performance. He appears as a clown in this telenovela. He also appears as a sort of aspirant to the heir of Napoleon, the emperor, the French emperor.
Let me stop you if I can, Catherine. I'm sort of losing the scene on the street here. I've got
okay.
Two women walking down the street. Marcial pulls up in his SUV. He's telling them to get in, and this is the scene where they resist him. Is that right?
They resist him, exactly.
All right, let's listen.
But I'm just trying to sort of paint the picture of this character, this male, very strong male character, because he has various persona. And when he pulls up, he is sounding very nice and cordial, saying, well, how are you? And then the minute he gets out of his car, under his breath, he says, what a pair of crazy women. What were you doing on that program? Let me give you a ride home. And at that point, the two women resist and say, no, we're not going home with you. We're going home alone.
All right, let's have a listen to it now.
No, Marcia. No, nos vamos a ir solas.
Yeah, no te pongas enseguida porque se va peor. Please, va peor. A las dos. Suba.
Suéltanos. Déjanos. Espérate. Suéltame.
Ándale. Entro, súbete.
Suéltame.
Déjala. Vente.
Ya. Ya.
¡No le pegues, desgraciado! ¡Cobarde! ¡Me tienes harta! ¡Harta me tienes! Y no me voy a subir. No.
You coward, says Magdalena. I'm fed up with you. I've had enough of you. It's a pretty strong resistance to the force that he's trying to use.
Yes, and plus she gets reinforcements from Rebecca, who tells him, don't you dare hit her, you miserable bastard. Excuse my language, but that is the language. And so what's very significant here is that for the first time, Maria Magdalena fights back physically. She slaps him just as hard as he has just slapped her. And it's clear that she's resolved not to cooperate. And so we go through, you know, a series of additional struggles in this episode. He does manage to sort of kidnap them in a way. He ties them together and locks them in a room. But they manage to get out with the solidarity of some neighborhood women. And I think that this is very important because the episode sort of argues that through solidarity and through counting on one's community, one can overcome many obstacles, including a very difficult personal marital relationship.
All right, I want to try and bring Antonio in here. Antonio, I have a piece of music to play for you. Tell me if you can recognize this theme music.
Recognize, but I can't tell you that it certainly sounds like a telenovela scene.
It's Betty LaFay.
LaFay, yes.
Or at least it comes from there, which is one that, that you were saying is becoming really quite popular around the world, Betty LaFay. Now, that translates to what, Betty the Ugly or Ugly Betty?
Betty the Ugly, yeah. Yes, exactly.
Why is this one so popular?
Well, it seems that one reason why Betty LaFay has achieved enormous popularity is because it challenged a lot of the notion that most telenovelas in Latin America have relied on beauty, on the star. The leading actress is always like this very beautiful woman who feels sort of like the model of, you know, standards of beauty. And especially it's a particular important topic in Colombian telenovelas. And Betty LaFay is exactly the opposite. She is supposed to be ugly, even though the actress is considered one of the most beautiful women in Colombia, and she would spend 4 hours a day transforming herself into the ugly one. And, you know, and again, this is a value judgment. I don't think she was that ugly to start with. But what was fascinating to think about this telenovela was that how she became so popular as struggling to prove herself as a worker, independently of her beauty. So she doesn't conquer the love of her life because she's a beautiful woman, but rather because she's hardworking and she struggles and she wins.
Neither of these themes, both the one that Catherine was describing and the one that you're describing, sound to me like the classic sort of basic Cinderella story that has formed the basis of melodramas like this for so long.
Yeah. And I think that's what is interesting about telenovelas. In the last, I think Brazil was the innovator in some ways that began using contemporary social issues, political topics within the telenovela narratives. and slowly other countries have followed suit. Mexico, if I'm not mistaken, started with TV Azteca in the early to mid-90s, producing telenovelas that were socially conscious or contemporary based, and that has become now a new trend. So there's a Mexican, Venezuelan scholar, in fact, who now works in Mexico, who argues that there is the telenovela dura and the telenovela blanda, the hard and the soft
yes.
telenovela.
Now, Catherine, why is it then? I mean, what we're describing, what Antonio's describing, is this why the telenovela is becoming increasingly popular in the United States as well as around the world? Because there's a maturing of it?
Well, that's part of it. I think that one cannot conceive of the telenovela anymore without considering its transnational transmission.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, that was just an economic solution for the conglomerates and the producers in these countries of origin. But now they
recognize to export it in order to pay for the next episode.
Well, in order to maintain production values,
right.
You end up saturating your domestic market, and you have to keep up production values that can be competitive on an international level. And I should add that Brazil, of course, we should also see how these countries can innovate and not just borrow techniques
exactly.
from the U.S. and Europe. Brazil was the first to use digital technology in very creative ways in telenovelas.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that the telenovelas that are being produced in Latin America have even higher production values than, for example, North American soap operas now?
Yes, some do. Absolutely. And that's part of their appeal. But secondly, I think this question of contemporary social issues is taking into account the fact that these countries have entered into certain crises, political and economic, and that one cannot stray too far from those crises without addressing them in some way. What kind of solution one proposes, of course, is a good question. And I think that we get different sorts of solutions and contradictions within any given telenovela.
They'd be in Trump trouble, though, would they not, Antonio, if they took the love story away from a Venezuelan telenovela and they just made it about the politics of President Chavez, for example?
I think so. And I think, in fact, some telenovela writers had struggled with that topic. Many times a telenovela writer will try to promote an agenda too far and stray away from the melodramatic, and it loses its audience. And there will be, in Brazil at least, there will be cases in which the writer will be fired and a new crew will be brought in to continue the telenovela. There were a couple stories in The Cattle King. There was a very popular telenovela in the mid-90s that dealt with land reform. The ratings became problematic in the middle of the telenovela because the writer was focusing too much on the issues of land reform and paying very little attention to the main couple, the romantic story. So they had that is a certain balance between social issues or political message or even any form of consciousness that a writer or a producer might try to push with the melodramatic. And I think that balance is always a fine line. There was another recent case in the, I think it was 99, in which a telenovela had a lesbian couple in Brazil. It was called a Babel Tower. And within 30 episodes, the whole shopping center where they worked was destroyed.
All right. We're going to come back, talk more about the melodrama heart of the telenovela and just how much the writers and the actors and the different nations can add to that and what it is about that combination that's bringing it back from the sort of soap opera part of the television to a more mainstream acceptance right around the world. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to hear from you on your sense of the curious appeal, the new and growing appeal of the telenovelas, certainly not just in North America, but right around the world. With me on the program, Catherine Benamou and Antonio Lapastina, both of them experts, media scholars on the telenovelas themselves. Let's go straight to our telephone lines in Raleigh, North Carolina. Steve's on the line. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Dick.
Thanks for calling.
Sure. I just wanted to call in because I'm just kind of tickled by this whole thing. I'm married to a Korean woman, and her mother lives with us. So my mother-in-law is Korean, born and raised there, and she loves these programs. And I got to tell you, not only does she hardly speak English, she certainly doesn't speak any Spanish, and she's hard of hearing. But she watches these things religiously. And so I do have a question for Catherine and Antonio, if I could.
Sure.
What are the demographics of the viewers of these things? And why would a Korean woman who doesn't speak a lick of Spanish be glued to the set for these things?
All right, Steve, thanks for that. Catherine, do you want to start off?
Yeah, the demographics are expanding, of course. The core audience is mainly Spanish-speaking audience in the U.S., many of whom have immigrated recently, you know, first generation to the U.S. That's who it's going to probably appeal to most. But we find second and third generation Latinos also going back to the telenovelas, especially the ones that are put out by some youth-oriented channels such as Telefutura, et cetera, and Telemundo. Because they want to sort of recapture their culture in some way. But we do see everywhere from Mongolia, right, to what you're saying, Korean communities in the U.S. watching these. There are a number of key
You said
elements.
Mongolia, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Venezuelan telenovela was so popular in Mongolia that they brought the stars over from Venezuela and gave them red carpet treatment.
And these weren't subtitled. They were just ran as broadcast, right?
They were run as broadcast, possibly with some voiceover
okay.
in Mongolia. I think once you get international export, there is an attempt to dub the language or subtitle them for that national audience. But of course, what you're raising is the question of why within the U.S., people who either don't speak Spanish and are mm-hmm. Latino or who are not Latino and don't speak Spanish are watching these. A number of key attractions. One is the music. What you heard at the opening of the show and before the break was Juan Gabriel, absolutely probably the most important torch singer from Mexico, singing the theme song to Salome. And these musicians are used to promote the telenovelas. Those theme songs are recorded onto CDs and promoted because, of course, Televisa, the largest Mexican producer of telenovelas, is a conglomerate. Secondly, so the music is circulating, in addition to sort of an added incentive. Secondly, the style of acting. This is expressionistic style. Melodrama demands a more theatrical style from mm-hmm. the performer. In the U.S., the soap operas are sort of very low-key, trying to play for everyday life realism. But there is no problem in the Latin American telenovela with pushing the emotions to their extremes.
And using the music behind the emotions to torque it even further.
Absolutely. So empathy, identification with the character and character-driven narratives, I think, are the key.
So, Antonio, if the telenovelas are so driven, though, by dialogue, this is the part that I can't quite connect. Because, I certainly understand what Catherine's saying about the emotions being at the forefront, but there's a lot of dialogue there, and you'd think that would push people away if they're not Spanish speakers.
Well, you have to remember that the seriality, the serial nature of the narrative also allows for repetition. So a lot of the dialogues are being reemphasized day after day, so there is no... If you lose, for instance, if you miss an episode... You're not going to lose the sight of what is happening. You can keep track. And many times the dialogue is really reemphasizing what is happening visually. You know, the visual cues are very important on telenovelas. And I think Catherine was very clear about, you know, how the music plays a very important role in transmitting the emotions. And I think so the use of the style or the camera movement, the color, the moods that are transmitted with the image, plus the music, is only, you could almost say it's a third music, a third scenes, a third dialogue. So you have a lot that is going on without the dialogues. And I think that's what makes it appealing for people who might not even speak the language.
All right. Steve, thanks for that call. Let's go to Newton, Massachusetts now. Isna's joining us. Hi, Isna.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. One thing, I'm Brazilian, so one thing that really interests me in the, you know, with this whole soap opera thing, I was, you know, raised with it. But one point that I want to add to all of what is the greatest appeal for everybody is that our soap operas, they last very little. They go for 4 months, 6 months. It's different from Americans that soap operas last years and years, like General Hospital and so on and so forth. So,
why does that make a difference, Isna?
Because you know that there is a beginning, middle, and end. Huh. That this is not going to take forever. So you keep track of all your favorite characters when you are watching them, and you know what it's going to develop. Since we're talking about soap operas, you kind of know what is going to happen next. You know, you expect that, oh, is he going to do this or that? It's not that
if he's kissing this girl, his girl is going to phone on the cell phone and interrupt him, right?
That sort of thing. So that, you know, always keep, you know, it's part obvious and part of the mystery appeal if it takes a different turn and you were always watching. And you know, that's the whole deal of the mystique of the soap operas.
But it's such a commitment to get attached to one of these telenovelas, because I'm not sure if I made it clear, but in many cases they run for an hour every evening, Monday through Friday.
Well, but they understand that one day you have someone that it's suffering something in it. The next day, they're going to know if the answer of that illness is fatal or not. Mm-hmm. And the next day, I want to see if it's fatal, if she's going to die or not. And then you get an answer that she has cancer, for example. And then, but it has a cure or not a cure, you know. So is this something that can be done? And then it's the next day that you're going to know about that. And then that goes on and on. So that keeps you glued. And you know that is not going to last for 2 years, meaning you know that this day, because of the plot, and it's quick. So you know that this is not going to keep you, you know, wondering.
It's not a commitment
that
for life is what you're saying. All right, Isna, thanks so much for being with us. I want to, Antonio, and then perhaps to Catherine on just what it is we're talking about here. Because in North American television, prior to all that's been changing in the past years, the melodrama, the soap opera, was fairly quickly marginalized onto daytime television, marked as women's television. But there's something about the melodrama at the heart of the telenovela, which has always been open to men and women. And I'm sure that's part of the reason for its sort of resurgence or its current popularity. Antonia, how do we explain that?
Well, I can tell you how the Brazilian case worked. And I think Brazil, within Latin America, has always had the largest male audience following telenovelas. And starting in the 70s, writers would start including topics that dealt with men's interests. So we have a telenovela in the 70s that dealt with soccer. Or you have a telenovela that dealt with you still have the romantic involvement, but you have the incredible sequences of players. It's like one of the leading actors was a soccer player, and it's his struggle. Another telenovela dealt with mining, and it's like the life of these ranchers, and they also work. They have they're searching for diamonds. So, you know, it's like you start mixing the themes and adding elements that become attractive to a male audience. And the importance of doing that is that you want to keep that audience. You want to reach the male audience that is also potential consumers. So, and that is, you know, so you have these telenovelas that are becoming more complex and have more layers of narrative, not just targeting the female viewer, the women viewer who are going to buy the soap, as, you know, it was at the beginning of the history of the genre, but rather a more complex set of issues that will attract different audiences, and not only based in gender, but also age.
Right.
Most telenovelas will try to target young kids, young adults, adults and seniors.
But Catherine, the melodrama itself, it's like Harlequin romance. It's something that we're supposed to look down on. You know what I mean?
Yes, well, I think we need to return to the question of how these telenovelas are addressing very contemporary issues and how they travel between the public and the private sphere. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to remember that gender is different from feminine. In other words, these are very highly gendered narratives. But that means that they can appeal to more than one gender. And I think if I can sort of point to very interesting development in Mexican telenovelas, they're becoming even queer. We have an increasingly number of transvestites, known transvestites, recognized as such, playing important roles in telenovelas. So this idea that one can sort of dress, perform one's identity, I think, is coming through.
This isn't considered something challenging in a country that's so been so historically so Catholic?
Absolutely, but I think that it's brought within, in a way, the Catholic fold, because if you have such a predominantly Catholic narrative sending messages of reconciliation, tolerance, redemption after you have sinned, which is a very overt theme in some recent telenovelas from Mexico, then it all sort of comes into the fold. So Catholic has two different significances. You know, Catholic as in all-encompassing, right? And Catholic as in the church as an institution. But I want to point to one telenovela which was extremely successful in Los Angeles in 1997 as an example. It was called Si Tu Supieras María Isabel. It was about a woman from a Huichol community who goes to work as a maid in Mexico City and becomes married to an engineer who works for a major U.S. auto company. Now, clearly the allegorical possibilities with this romance, you know, are, you know, this is NAFTA. We now have this sort of marriage of Mexican traditional culture, which is going to survive, of course, in the age of increased U.S. investment in trade. But what this telenovela did was it referenced the Chiapas situation very allegorically, because the Huichol, of course, are not located in Chiapas at all, but they burn the land after being mistreated by a landowner. And this sort of scene of violence, of course, could only conjure up for Mexicans and migrant Mexicans the memory of Chiapas. So this is an issue which, of course, goes way beyond gender and reaches into community. And I think that when we look at the construction of the family in telenovelas, we don't get just a nuclear family as we get on many sitcoms. And that's perhaps why Latino sitcoms have not done as well. And because how do you construct the family and the family in relation to the community? And one of the national markers of the Mexican telenovela is that they reference the neighborhood, the colonia, and how all of these characters' dramas are played out within the community. So I think we have to rethink what melodrama means in different cultural contexts.
All right, Connection listeners, you're listening to The Connection on telenovelas on National Public Radio. And we thought we'd listen to a clip from a movie that may be slightly more familiar to English-speaking listeners, because in many ways the film, the recent film Maid, M-A-I-D, in Manhattan, is seen as a film that was heavily influenced by what it is telenovelas are telling us. This is Jennifer Lopez playing Marisa Ventura, a single mother who works as a maid in a hotel.
What were you thinking going out with someone like that?
Someone like what?
Chris Marshall. You had to pretend to be somebody else so that he would go out with you?
Where is your pride, Marisa? People like you make people like him some kind of god. Why? Because he's rich? He's white? He has things that we don't have, that we don't even want to dream about? It must really burn you that I think I have the right to go out with him.
You don't.
What happened to you?
Don't speak to me like that. I am not the one who lost her job today.
No, I did. Mm-hmm. I messed up. Okay, it's all my fault. But you know what? It's all right. I'm going to be fine.
Yes, you will, because tomorrow we're going to call Senora Rodriguez. She owes me a favor. She has
a... Look, I'm not calling Mrs. Rodriguez, okay? I love you. Okay, I do. But I don't want to clean houses. There's nowhere to go from there.
Hasn't this taught you anything, Marisa? Wake up, little girl. You have responsibilities. And they come every month like clockwork. You want to end up back in the projects? Keep dreaming dreams that will never happen.
Antonio, I'm wondering if it's fair to say that the telenovelas influence not just films like Maid in Manhattan, but whether or not we're seeing it elsewhere in American popular culture as well.
I think so. I think that is an attempt to bring, well, there were some attempts to try to produce some English language soaps with co-productions, but I think there were other movies that tried to appeal to this melodramatic narrative. I think it's hard for us to say that is a direct influence of the soap opera, of the telenovelas, or if it's just a resurgence of the melodrama that has been a staple of Hollywood productions throughout the century. I think it's hard for us to assess where is this really connection between telenovelas and Hollywood movies. It's like, is in the case of the Made in Manhattan because of the character's Hispanic ancestry that we are tying to the melodramatic nature of telenovelas or not. So, I don't know.
And Catherine, it's also true, is it not, that the telenovelas in Latin American countries are in many ways the Hollywood of those countries, television not
yes.
seen the same way here.
Yes. And I would agree with Antonio actually on that point about the image of the maid. And here we are, taking the most stereotypic aspects of the melodrama and incorporating it into a Hollywood film. In Latin America, I'll take the example of Mexico, and I'm sure Antonio can address Brazil. After NAFTA, because North American media conglomerates were buying up exhibition space in Mexico for film, television came to displace film as the major medium of national consumption. And not only that, but Televisa, through one of its subsidiaries, became the biggest producer of cinema in Mexico. And the resilience of these media organizations is tremendous, that they've survived, tremendous political change. Globo in Brazil was launched during the military dictatorship, but of course it's remained important today. So, yes, these are probably the single most important institutions in these Latin American societies.
And interesting as well that they also make a tremendous amount of money. We'll get a chance to talk a little bit more about that when we come back after the break. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, what does the growth of the telenovela tell us about the influence of Latin American culture, not just in the United States, but right around the world? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Connection listeners, are you ready for a little more melodrama in your life, even if it's not in your first language? We're talking about telenovelas, the hugely popular and growing in popularity Latin American soap operas. And with me on the program today, Catherine Benamou. She's a teacher of Spanish, Latino studies and film studies at the University of Michigan, also a professional film and video editor. Antonio Lapestina is joining us. He is a teacher in the communications department at Texas A&M University, worked also as a journalist in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And we're going to go straight back to our telephone lines to Boston. And Mike's joining us. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Good afternoon, Mr. Gordon.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. I'm calling because I've been watching Spanish language television for quite a while. I've been watching Univision and Telemundo, mostly Telemundo and the novellas and soap operas, as you call them, as well as watching things like the Latin Music Awards. And I'm very curious to know why that most of these programs originate from places like Venezuela, Brazil, Colombia, where the majority of these populations are black. But if you watch the novellas, you would think there are no blacks in Latin America. And if you watch the Latin American Music Awards, you may see two or three. If you watch the shows in general, the talk shows, you may see one or two. And I'm very curious, even the magazines, you almost see no black Latinos. So I'm wondering, is there a major racial bias in Latin America on Latin TV?
Let's stick, if we can, Mike, to the question about telenovelas, because it's a great one. And Antonio, maybe you can help Mike on this one.
Oh, I certainly agree with you, and I think think about the United States and the issues of representation of minority groups are in the U.S. media, multiply that by, you know, 1,000, and you're going to see the problem that you have in Latin America. You look in Brazil, the majority of the actors and actresses who have leading roles are white.
Yes.
And that has been historically one of the problems. In the last, I would say, 10 years, you see, it's important to understand that in the case of Brazil, at least, there was a association with the dictatorship, and that will get, you know, us too far here from our central topic. But in the last 10 years, there has been a push to increase the number of black Brazilians in telenovelas. And in fact, in the mid-90s, you had for the first time a middle-class black family on a telenovela. And it was a major issue of discussion in the country. Then a couple years later, there was one incident in a telenovela that was an actual... The star of the telenovela made racist remarks towards his driver, who happens to be black,
mm-hmm.
and that led to, in fact, a push for a lawsuit by one black movement in Brazil to sue Rede Globo, the largest network, to try to get greater representation of African Brazilians or Brazilians of African descent on telenovelas. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, it has changed a little bit, but we are far from any major equal representation. And I think that's the same in other parts of Latin America. And in Mexico, there has always been the issue with the indigenous population that is completely underrepresented in those programs.
Catherine, is that because it's more marketable to export these programs to Asian, European countries if they use lighter-skinned people as the actors?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that whether it's actually more marketable, we don't know. The perception of the decision makers at these organizations is that it is. In other words, that you have to sort of meet world standards. And if your telenovela is primarily transnational, what do you want to export? You want to export an image of a sort of upwardly mobile, people who are actually educated and so on to the outside world. And the idea is that there's a kind of stigma attached to indigenous populations or to Afro-diasporic populations, perhaps which is unjustified, but that is probably the perception, kind of interjection, right, of sort of U.S. hierarchy into these media organizations. And certainly we see a lot of dyeing of the hair of the Mexican
I noticed all the blondes
actresses.
In Rebecca, for example.
Absolutely. And clearly if you have olive skin or darker features, you're going to be in a working class or servile role. And that rule still pretty much holds for Mexico. The telenovela I mentioned with Maria Isabel Huichol is definitely the exception and not the rule. But I want to say that this brings up an important question, which is that once you turn to reality format, once you start referencing reality, and I just saw a telenovela in Brazil called Turma do Ghetto, the gang of the ghetto, which is, you know, very much like City of God, the film that was just released nationwide here, trying to show sort of ghetto life in Brazil and its, you know, its relationship to rap, a culture, drugs and crime, which is, you know, not the best image one could paint of Brazil, but that is the way in which sort of blackness is inscribed. And so I think this is a very important issue.
I wonder, Mike, if this is getting at what you're asking about.
Okay, yeah, it is. But also, I mean, you know, you could say that about these other countries, but what about the programs that are produced in Miami or about the magazines that are published here, okay? They're the same way. They don't show any black Latinos.
Right.
So, I mean,
right.
Well, what is it with Latin American blacks? I mean, you know, you could say that about these other countries, but when you're in America and you're still doing that, I'm very curious about that. Yeah, I was told that there's a magazine called Latina where they showed no black Latinas whatsoever, and there was a protest, and they made another magazine called Urban Latina to put black Latinas because they wouldn't put it in the first magazine. So if that's happening here, I'm like really curious about where this is going, since the influence of Spanish culture and language and everything upon America and the world. Well, Mike, you know, where is this headed?
I'm glad you brought it up, and we've had a chance to chat about it. I do want to move on. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about the telenovela, and we're next in Louisville, Kentucky. Teresa's joining us. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for waiting.
You're welcome. I was introduced to telenovelas back in the 80s when I was trying to learn to speak Spanish.
Mm.
And the two things I noticed most about it and loved most about them were that they're so operatic in nature. You know, American soap operas are more like, I don't know, more about soap. And the novellas are more about the opera part. They're really over the top and intense.
You mean campy over the top or
no,
believable over the top?
No, just operatic. You know how you sort of suspend your belief system when you go to the opera?
Sure.
It's the same sort of thing. And I was really surprised that they really do appeal to everybody, men, women, children, old people. The first time I saw one was actually in a restaurant in Mexico. Everybody disappeared at 8 o'clock, and the people we were with said, the novellas are on. And we all ended up, the customers, the waiters, the owners, the kids, ended up in the back room watching the novella for an hour. And that's really was my introduction to them. And I just, I never forgot that, and I was really impressed by it.
Do you still watch them, Teresa?
Occasionally. We've moved to Louisville, and we don't get the Spanish stations anymore, so I only get to watch them when we go to Latin businesses where the television's on.
I'm wondering if you feel like, I don't really want to start watching this one because then I'm going to be hooked. And
no, because they're so short.
Yeah?
They're so short. It's only a few months, and you can pick up the story if you only see it twice a week. But, no, I like them that for that reason, too, because they don't go on for years and years.
All right, Teresa, thanks so much for your call.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
And Antonio, I want to pick up just a part of what we were discussing earlier, if I can, and that is a little bit about class, not so much color, but class, because if the telenovela is meant to show people what their life could be or what they might aspire to, because there's a lot of ambition wound up in programs like this. Does that mean that they concentrate on a middle-upper class, but they aim for a middle-lower class audience?
That's a good point. I think so. The target audience, at least for Global Network in Brazil, tends to be what they define as class B and C on a 5 A, B, C, D, E. And another network in Brazil tends to target class C and D. So, in fact, that network, that is the SBT, what we call SBT, the Brazilian television system, they show a lot of Mexican telenovelas that seem to have, in Brazil at least, a greater following among classes C and D. And there are several arguments where people have developed several arguments why that is, and in many cases tied to class, tied to cultural capital, and so on, which is some problematic notions. But yes, that is a class association with the telenovelas, and the types of behaviors, the types of clothing, the types of leisure activities, and interiors, house decoration that are shown are trying to appeal to this upper mobile, lower middle class to middle class, upper middle class.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Catherine, I'm wondering whether or not you regard the growth and the global spread of the telenovela as a positive exposure of different cultures around the world, or whether or not there isn't a risk that it'll all just get homogenized into something with a Miami spin on it that ends up telling us nothing about Venezuela or Colombia.
I definitely see it as a positive development that Latin American countries are exporting media to other parts of the world. We have to remember that the telenovela is not a pure form. It never was. It draws together several different genres, different influences. We see, for example, right now in Mexican telenovelas, the influence of B movies and even B personalities in the casting of these telenovelas. And it is a very fertile ground for the mixing of cultures. So I don't think we can say that it's just Latin American culture that's being exported. We have to think of what elements of Latin American culture and perhaps how rather the flexible matrix of the telenovela is what is teaching us the lesson that it's possible to accommodate different cultural influences while still speaking one's language. I think that the Miami development is an appeal to the youth market, which is probably the most important emerging market right now for media in the U.S. They say that one out of five youths in this country is so-called Hispanic. And I think that this will bring up questions of race and language. The Hispanic youth market is very open to consuming different types of media, and they're one of the most important audiences for BET, for example,
right.
Black Entertainment Television. So I think that we should be watchful of the Miami phenomenon, but I don't think it's going to drown out the exporting from Latin American countries.
But there's, go ahead, Antonio.
I just wanted to make a comment that also you have to remember that for this, for Venezuelan, Brazilian, Mexican telenovela producers, the internal market is very important. And that those telenovelas, they need to be successful within their local market, the national market, to be able to get exported as well. Telenovelas that are not successful within Mexico or Brazil have a harder time to be placed abroad. But to be able to satisfy the local market, you can make a telenovela that is too transnational, too foreign to the local taste. And I think that's something that I think is important to think, that we are talking about telenovelas in a very general sense, but Brazilian telenovelas, Venezuelan telenovelas, Argentinian, they have some specific characteristics that are very focused on the local market. So we can generalize in terms of broad genre rules and strategies, but there are some specificities that are that we need to take in consideration in relation to local markets. So I think in the long run we might see some change, but I don't think we'll completely eradicate the local flavor of the programs.
All right, Antonio, thanks for being with us on the program today.
Thank you.
Antonio Lapastina teaches in the communication department at Texas A&M University. He's a fan of telenovelas. Catherine Benamu, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Catherine is a professor of Spanish, Latino studies, and film studies at the University of Michigan. And Connection listeners, if you want to exchange some ideas about the telenovela with other listeners, you can find them in the forum section of our website. We're at theconnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.